Well, I understand that we're live, and I'm alive. I have a cold, so I apologize in advance if my voice sounds bad or I have to grab some water before I go into a coughing fit. But welcome to the session. I understand there's also some people online. Thank you for joining us remotely as well. We do have a moderator who can see your questions, and so I invite the people who are joining us online to participate as if you were here as best you can. And we'll try to make sure that we pay attention to you as well as to the people that I can actually see. So my name is Stephanie Teasley. I'm from the University of Michigan, and I'm here to talk about using analytics to support at-risk STEM students. I'd like to acknowledge my collaborators on this project. One is in the room here with us, Steve Lahn, so I ask him to wave so the people who are here, if you have questions for him and see him later, you know who he is. I also have two recent graduates of the University of Michigan who were a very important part of this project, Andy Crum, who's now at SRI, and Joe Waddington, who's now at Notre Dame. So I want to make sure I acknowledge all my colleagues on this. So we're here today to talk about a problem that we have, or that many students have, and that's that students need help, and they need help to succeed academically, but they don't always know they need help, and we sure don't always know that they need help. And this is a very complicated picture because, as one of my colleagues at Michigan has outlined, there is a multi-component process for student help seeking, and he's identified these stages. And you can imagine that there are several points along the way here that students have been shown to not be very good at. Certainly determining that a problem exists. Sometimes students don't even realize that they're doing poorly. I know this can be an issue for online students who don't have a benchmark. They don't know how they're performing relative to other students in the class. And certainly at a place like the University of Michigan, where there can be very large classes, unless the instructor specifically gives feedback about performance, a student may think that they're doing pretty well. To determine that help is needed is another certainly key point. Decide to seek help. Many students who are in trouble just prefer to lay low and pretend the problem will go away, or just complain about a class. And so they need to establish the goal of seeking help, and then they have to decide whom to ask. And this, I think, is a pretty big problem for students because, especially on a campus like mine, they don't know who to go to for help. So first I wanted to ask you just to shout out a few of the kind of academic advising services you offer on your campus or through your institution. Just go ahead and shout them out.
Integrated system where faculty can alert the student and the advisor.
Okay. So there's a system that alerts students and advisors. And what generates the alert?
The faculty member through our
Okay, so from a faculty member. But I'm talking about, so it's students in a course and they get this alert. What do you have available on your campus? Where does that student then go?
A tutoring center,
okay. Sometimes disciplinary specific, right? What else?
Counseling,
counseling services, academic or personal. Mm-hmm. What else? You must have other resources on your campus, academic advisors, right, faculty, I'm sorry?
Financial aid
office, right. So there are lots of services, and then the question is, how do students find out about them? Instructors maybe send them, maybe they get there's a whole packet that they get at the beginning of the year when they start a course. But basically, if you ask students on campus, you know, where do you go to get help with, often you get blank stares or shrugs of shoulders. And I don't know about your campus, but what do you think is the estimated use of these services? Do you think they're at capacity? Are they not at capacity? No, I'm seeing no. No, they're not at capacity. I think there's some that probably are highly used, that tutoring, very highly used. Yeah, I'm thinking of the typical instructor experience of holding office hours and nobody shows up. And I don't know how common that is across all these services, but I know on our campus there are services that are not, who feel like they could be reaching more students. But one of the problems at Michigan is if you go to our academic advising website, you'll find that there are 88 different resources. And if you go to this list, you can show more details and get a nice little blurb about each service. But I think if you're a brand new freshman on campus or even a sophomore on campus, there's a fair amount of learned helplessness already going on. And they're confronted with a list like this. They don't even know where to go or what to do or to know which one is the right one for the kind of problem that they have. So recognizing that problem, we then asked ourselves, how can the learning management system on campus play a role? And it sounds like you at least already have one system. So when we think about this, we think about, well, that's where the grades live, and ultimately the grades at this point in time are the marker of whether a student is doing well or not. On our campus, most of the grades live inside the course management system, and faculty have access to those grades. They could know how any individual student is doing. The other thing an LMS can do is it captures data on student behavior. So most LMS systems will actually create a data log on a click-by-click basis. So you can, it's possible to know what exactly students are doing inside of these systems, which may then actually reveal certain patterns of behavior that can be related to performance. And we're going to talk about that more in a minute. And then it can also provide a benchmark for online course-related activity on a course-by-course basis. So you can look inside of a course and see how the students are doing in that individual course, or how any student is doing relative to the other students in that course, and not just what their overall GPA or overall success rate is. So for us, we thought about using LMS data to do a number of things. So we thought about using the LMS data to first identify who needs the most help. How are these students doing? Who are the ones who seem to be in trouble? You can also look at course sequencing, and I think this is being done across a number of campuses that we've heard about. Does a student do better in course Y if they've taken course X first? A concrete example is a new project that we're starting. We know that some students in the STEM disciplines are told to take this baseline intro physics course over the summer, say at your local community college, to save a little money and get a jump ahead. But we don't know how those students then perform in the next course in the sequence relative to the students who took that course on our campus instead of over the summer somewhere else. We can also figure out what are the most and least successful portions of a course. So you can get information on any point in time, are the students going to the resources? Are they doing the extra homeworks? Are they doing the extra readings? If you see that students have performed poorly across a set of homeworks or a particular exam, you can go back and look and see, well, why might that be? Especially as an instructor, I'm curious. I put all this stuff up on the web. If they'd read it, they would have done well. So the instructor doesn't know. Did they read it? In many cases. Some systems have dashboards. Our system is not very transparent at that. And then you can use the LMS data to notify instructors about their students. You could notify the students themselves, as some systems are doing, like the Signals project at Purdue. And for us, what we were focusing on is that you can notify academic advisors about students who are at risk. So what we did then was investigate a number of research questions. And we decided to use the LMS data to provide timely and targeted information to academic advisors. And particularly, we thought it was crucial to shorten the time between when a student has a problem and when someone goes to that student and says, you have a problem, here's what I think you can do about it. Because for a lot of students, the term goes by quickly. They're very busy. Advisors are busy, and by the time you might get to a student, it could be too late, really, to successfully intervene. So where we investigated these questions is a particular option that we have at Michigan called the STEM Academy. And this is a program that was started by our engineering college where they identified students who had met the criterion for being admitted to the College of Engineering, but for various number of reasons put them at risk, whether they're first-time college students, whether they're students with a high GPA from a relatively weak high school, students of color, and any number of reasons that the college has data previously that would suggest that these students are going to struggle in the College of Engineering. And furthermore, they were worried that students might struggle throughout and graduate, but they graduate with a lower GPA, so they're not as competitive on the job market as their peers graduating with higher GPAs. So they developed this program that identified these students at the time of admission and created an academy for them that included a large number of support services, including a summer program before their first visit on campus, before they enroll as freshmen. They have various social activities, so there's a sense of community. And they have required meetings once a month with an academic advisor. Now, Michigan is on a semester system, so once a month means you meet with your academic advisor in this program two, three, maybe four times over the course of the semester. And if a student misses one, then there's a longer period of time. And these academic advisors felt that they had a very strong program going on, that they felt and had data to show that the students in their program were doing very well, but they had a big problem. And that was, even though the students were required to come to these monthly meetings, some students didn't come, some students forgot to bring the form that was supposed to inform the advisor of their grade so far. And often it was the case that the academic advisors were not finding out these students were really in trouble until the end of the term when they had a final grade, which is far too late to help them. So what we have done in this project is develop an early warning system that provides timely information to these advisors and very targeted data on student performance. And it delivers it directly to these advisors or mentors, as they're also called. And we wanted to work with them to find out what did they need to know and how would they like that to look and how could we help them intervene with these students in more effective ways. And we started here with this program because it does have this other larger infrastructure for these students. We saw it as sort of a best case scenario. You provide a lot of resources to help students and then you provide an additional one that really helps the advisors know how they're doing. And we started there because ultimately we wanted to scale up to the campus. You can imagine this system being useful for academic advisors more broadly and other people whose job it is to kind of keep track of students, whether they're in a particular program or not. So what did we do? We did the tried and true human-computer interaction method of iterative development, where we looked inside our LMS data and said, what's there? And how can we use what's there to compare students? Particularly thinking of the opportunity to scale and the fact that these academy students were in various different kind of classes, we needed to develop a system that was agnostic to the kind of course so that it would work no matter which course the student was in. So we needed a metric for comparing a student with other students only in that class, right? So you get a sense of relative. And we developed classification schemes and then visualizations of student performance. And we delivered these weekly to these advisors, and then we worked with them to see how it was going. So in particular, as we gave them these reports, we were talking with them about which data do you need and why do you need it? What are you trying to do with it? How would you like to be informed? What do you think you need to know about these students? And then we employed these techniques of data mining, analysis, and visualization to create this early warning system. And again, as I said, the data for it primarily comes from C-Tools and uses this classification scheme. Yes, sir?
Just for scale, what's the ratio of students to advisor?
Students to advisor, well, there's 50 students in a cohort in MSTEM, and currently there are three or four. Now there are five advisors, so they each advise.
Three advisors, five cohorts.
Right, but a cohort has the incoming. They're primarily followed in their first year. There's four advisors, right, for 50 students, three or four. So they have a relatively focused list, and they meet with these students in other contexts as well. But as I said, they're supposed to show up. These students are supposed to show up on a regular basis in these advisors' office. Yes?
The advisors are professional advisors or are they faculty?
Yes, for this program, they are employed by the College of Engineering. They're people who have been on campus for a long time and have a lot of deep experience with these particular courses, even at the level of instructor. I'm going to come back to this point. They're able to say to a student, you know, you could take this class with this professor or this professor, and for you, I pick this instructor. So they're very, very knowledgeable about these gateway courses in the College of Engineering and have a lot of years of experience in thinking about helping students decide how to sequence them, when to take them, even with whom to take them on some occasions. Any other questions at this point? How about online? Is everyone okay? Good. Okay. We are fortunate that we run our own LMS. We're one of the Sakai partners, so we use a Sakai product on our campus, and we run it as CTools, and we have access to all that data at the CLIC level. And then, of course, we have grades. We can get those both from the registrar's office in terms of the student's larger GPA, but also because pretty much every course on our campus goes through the Sakai product, we can get students' grades from pretty much every course that they're in. And then the other thing that we're fortunate at Michigan is Michigan started probably 5 years ago to create a data warehouse. And one of the frustrating things, if you've ever tried to do any kind of analytics, is that data lives in different places on campus. So the registrar's data owns their data, and so forth. And at Michigan, fortunately, somebody had the vision, or probably the idea for a great cost-saving measure, to put all the data in one warehouse. And so we can make requests for certain kinds of data that goes to a single source, and we don't have to pick it up from this group and pick it up from this group and translate the files and figure out how to align the data. So we can get from this warehouse and the various sources there, we can know things about the students, including information that they submitted application. And we can look at their academic history, what courses they've taken, what grades did they get, and so forth. Okay, so what we're going to do then was do this weekly data query of CTools for the courses that these students are enrolled in. There are a lot of courses offered on campus, but because they're engineering students and they're taking their first gateway courses, there is a more restricted range of courses that they're likely to be in. And the other trick that we had to do is there are some courses on campus where the instructors find an alternative place to do their grading, particularly in the math courses. So originally we could only look at the courses where they were using the gradebook inside the LMS. Fortunately, we have great working relationship with the college, and so we began working with the administrator who takes care of the other gradebook tool that the instructors use. So we can now bring that data in as well and create kind of a master file for each student's performance. Now, it's not easy. You can't read this clearly, but that's just how hard it is. That's what the data comes in. And it takes somebody like Steve and the grad students a while to figure out what this is. And it's just line by line data. Every line is a student and a click and a kind of click. And so we had to figure out which of those clicks are really important. What did they represent, and what could we do with them that was meaningful for us? And so that took some time, and then putting them in a file that then would be subject to the kind of statistical analysis we wanted to do was also hard work. And thank goodness for bright and eager colleagues. So what we did then was we used the gradebook and the assignments tools for tracking these students' progress. And then we reported the student level information back to the advisors. And the way we did that was because we wanted the performance relative to class, we would give them information about how this student is doing relative to the other students in the class. So you need to know how's everybody else doing, which means that you don't just pull data for the students in the program, you pull the data for every student in that class, so you have a marker to gauge what's going on. The other thing that we did, we spent a lot of time talking and thinking about effort. And what can we use as a proxy for effort? Because we needed to know to have some sense about, were students getting bad grades because they were kind of slackers, or were they students who, by all other purposes, look like they're working very hard but aren't getting it? And we wanted to be able to figure out how we could incorporate that in our system. So what we simply do is use the amount of presence events. So our LMS logs a code, a line of code, every time a student logs into it. And we don't care how long they're there. It's just a sheer frequency count. How often are they going to this website to get the information? Now, you can imagine that some courses, I'm sure you know, some courses have almost nothing in their LMS site, right? They have a syllabus, maybe a couple of slides. Other websites may have chat, discussion, so require a lot of posting. So again, it's really important here that if you're going to use these presence events, you use them relative to everybody else in the class, because that helps you determine whether the student, everybody else is posting on the chat and posting two or three times a week, and this student's not there. There's a lot of extra material to help the student. The other students are all making use of those resources, but the student isn't. So it's a good proxy for effort, and before we implemented it in our system, we wanted to see whether that was really true. So this is also a little bit hard to read, but what we did is we took one course, a pretty much standard gateway course, Engineering 100, and we went back to previous data and pulled out all the students in that course and what their final grade was and how often they had logged into the course site for that course over the course of a term. And if you can see this clearly, what you will notice is that the students with the low grades, which are the red, orange, and the darker yellow, are at the bottom of the graph. Those are students who did very poorly, and you can see that many of them are going to the website 25% less often than the students who got the average grade. And the A's and A-minus, B-plus students are the blues and green students, and you can see they're going to the website more frequently than the average student in the class. Now, there are a few exceptions in there, but this is just data from one class. And so what we decided is that, yes, these cumulative presence events can be predictive. They do provide useful information. They're not the be-all and end-all, but they do add something that we thought was valuable. So what we did, and you could say, well, that was cumulative, what happens over the course of a term. And, of course, there, with assignments and quizzes and midterms and so forth, you would expect there to be highs and lows in the activity on the website. And the pattern is still consistent. The good students are going there more often than the students who don't do so well, and they appear to be doing it when they need to, right, because of the ebbs and flows of the course. So what we did then was we created a classification scheme, and as I said, they're intra-class, and we simply gave percentile rankings for the presence events and the grades according to the course average. And we used a few simple rules, and I'm going to demonstrate them this way. This is a classification scheme that we came up with, and we have John Campbell's permission to acknowledge that we copied these signals in terms of the red, green, and yellow, but we call it the E3 because the green students are the students who are doing really well relative to their peers, and they just simply need encouragement from their advisors. Good job. You're doing a great job. I'm glad things are going well for you. The yellow ones are the kind of the warning ones, and they're explore. In this case, the advisor should talk with the student. Looks like you might be in a little bit of trouble. What do you think is going on? What are you having trouble with? And then, of course, the red students are engaged. That tells the academic advisor, engage with this student immediately. Do not wait till the monthly meeting. You might want to bring them in and talk to them. And you can see that which color you get, which label you get, depends on your percentile in the class, then your relative distance from your peers with respect to that grade. And then we use those presence events as a final determinant. If you're sort of on the line between engage or explore, but you're not showing up on the website very much, that will put you into the engage instead of leaving you in the explore. So it was just like a little added piece of information. Yes, sir?
Students can see also their
color? No. Unlike Purdue, and we're going to talk about that, we do not deliver this information to the students. We deliver this information to the advisors only. And the reason that we did this was twofold. One was based on an early comment, a conversation that I had with John Campbell probably almost 2 years ago, where he told me laughingly, he said, you know, When I talk to students, they can tell me their color, but they can't tell me why. And the other point is, I don't think we know enough about how students interpret that information that they get. I'm personally, until I have more data and understand this better, I'm really nervous about telling a student you're not doing well in this course. They probably already know that, but as we've shown, they don't necessarily know what to do about this. So I want to leverage the expertise and the authority of these academic advisors to interpret that for the student and help them think about how they might change the grade. Yes?
Are these greens and yellows and reds per course, or is it an overall data?
Let me show you. That's a good question. I'm going to go on. She asked whether this was per course or per student. So this is what it looks like right now. So the first column is the student name, which, of course, we've fudged out for us. You can see the four classes that each student is in. You can see their cohort because, as I said earlier, the students in this academy are tracked monthly on their first year, but not necessarily afterwards. They continue to be members of this community and engage in events with the community, but they're no longer required after the first year to meet with their academic advisors. So what it does is it shows the advisor on a date-by-date or week-by-week basis how the student is doing in that course by giving a percentage and then color coding where that leaves them relative to the other students in the course. And we added the change column just so advisors could quickly see from one week to the next, was a student getting out of trouble or continuing to be in trouble. And then the final ongoing course average is in that last column. So this gives you a really quick visualization. And because of the way it's structured in the data set, you could sort it in the way that you want. You could sort it by cohort, so you could look at all your first years first. You could sort it by class. You might want to see how all of your students are doing in a particular class. If they're all in trouble, then what's going on with this group? What extra resources might the academy need to provide them so they can do better? It does not give them this information at this level of detail for the other students in the course, but it can tell them, for my students, relative to the other students, how they're doing. So that was the kind of information that we gave the advisors in the first version of the system, and they found this classification helpful, but we had this issue that you often find when you introduce technology into a sort of an ongoing stream, right? People have their own processes. And honestly, when we first rolled this out, advisors forgot to look at it. They only looked at it quickly before their student was coming in anyway. And so we spent a lot of time talking with them about how we could make it more useful to them. And they identified some features that I'll show you in the next slide. But mostly at this point they said, well, we want it on all students because our first iteration was only with the first year students. And we want to know more about why they're in trouble in a given week. So what happened in the course during that week that all of a sudden now they're yellow? Or, you know, they're green for 3 weeks and now all of a sudden they're yellowed. Was there a quiz? Was there a midterm? Was there a big homework assignment or whatever? So we developed a detailed report that the advisor then can, in that original view that I show you, that advisor can click on an individual student for an individual class and get this data for the student. So it shows them still over time how the student is doing relative to the other students in the class, and that's on the upper left there, where the student is in blue and the class average is in the yellowy-red color. And so you can see here in this case that the student started out doing a little bit better than everybody else, but then by week three started to trail their peers and, in fact, continued to underperform relative to the class average. And so the advisor can go to the section on the right to find out why. So that lists individual assignments or the individual sources of grades and shows them, well, this student is in trouble because they never turn in the homework. Or they turn in every homework, but there was a quiz and they got a bad grade on the quiz. So this helps an advisor do some diagnostics about what the student's learning issues might be. If they're very diligent about doing the homework, but not doing well on the exams or quizzes, what is it about the way they're studying and what is it about the way they're utilizing the homework to prepare them for the exam? Or similarly, if they see that a student simply isn't doing the homework and then they're doing poorly on the exam, that's a pretty clear thing to acknowledge too. And I've talked to these advisors, and because some of these students don't have some of the same kind of preparation coming into college that some of their peers do, they don't necessarily even understand the value of doing the homeworks carefully, or that the optional readings maybe aren't optional, or that the practice quizzes, those aren't really optional either. Those are really valuable resources. So this helps the advisor specifically understand where the student is underperforming relative to their peers. So the feedback on this then was much better, and by then we'd sort of proven ourselves or the value of our system to them, and the mentors in the next semester told us that they use this weekly. In fact, at this point, they want to be able to go in any given day, and so we're working on a version of the system that provides them up-to-date information. This still relies on delivering a report from us to them on a weekly basis. And they really love that classification. It was so easy to identify students that were in trouble and to even see were they green and then yellow and now they're red. And despite the fact that they'd interacted with them at yellow when they were yellow, now they're red. So something's still going wrong on a weekly basis. And the other thing that they said that the students come to those monthly meetings, but now the advisors themselves feel better prepared for that student, because in the past when the student showed up with their little form that they brought in, that was the point when the advisor realized, oh man, this student's really in trouble. What do I need to tell them, and what kind of conversation do I need to have with them? What kind of resources do I need to be able to point them to? Here they can prepare for that meeting, and they also get a better sense of if the student themselves recognizes that they're in trouble. Because it was the case before any of this that students would come in and the advisor would say, how's it going? And the student would say, pretty good. And this advisor would say, well, you know, how are things going in your courses? They're good. And, you know, that would be about the level of information. Do you need help with anything? Oh, no. So this really, if the student has that kind of slightly clueless attitude about it, the advisor can say, well, but I know that you had a quiz in this class this week, and you know, you really didn't do very well, and I think it's because you didn't turn in the homeworks. And so the students know that the advisors have this level of access to information. It's part of their belonging in the STEM Academy. So they liked this, the context, the cleaner design. We still have an interface issue. As I said, the advisors are telling us we don't have data. We're not able to tell you that 25% of the students scored a half a grade higher after we delivered this to the mentors. At this point, we're relying on the fact that the mentors really like it. We could ultimately track whether these STEM Academy students are doing better than their previous cohorts, but there's so many factors involved there. We couldn't claim that it was because our system. We're happy with it, and because the advisors are happy with it. So our next steps is we've just gone from doing this ourselves, where Steve and Andy and Joe would crank out these numbers and deliver to the report, to turning it over to our ITS system, who goes into our campus data system. So that's been a little bit of a challenge. You know, we don't have our hands as tightly on it anymore. And so we're delivering the version. The ITS system is now delivering the version to the mentors, and we're working with them. We would like to develop an instructor view. I'm still leaving the student view on the table as we come to understand better about how students would react to this kind of information. And we're also talking about a messaging system. I have a colleague on campus. Some of you may have heard him here last year, Tim McKay, who's using a coaching system developed by a school of faculty member at our School of Public Health that does deliver tailored information to the student that might say something like, hey, that last quiz you did a little bit better than the other students in your class, and I noticed you didn't turn in the homeworks before that quiz. That might be the reason. So they might, we might get to that question. But I still have some open questions that I'm interested in pursuing before we get to those other things. And that is, I know from working with these advisors and talking to other academic advisors on our campus, they really have this very deep, very specific knowledge about how things work on campus. And I'm wondering what happens when we take the person out of the loop, right? And I'm also wondering how broad scale implementation might impact existing support services. So maybe there are services that are being underutilized now that may go to being overutilized or having more demand than they can meet. And that certainly might be scary for people who fund and run those programs. But I think that's a good problem to have. And then that last question I've already alluded to, what do we gain or lose by delivering this information directly to the students? So in summary, I think what we can talk about here is we've shown that we can close the gap between a problem identification and an intervention. And I think that that's really, really important, especially for these kinds of students, but you can imagine for lots of students on campus who get lost or easily get lost or don't really know what they're doing when they get there. And the earlier we can catch them and help them, the more likely it seems it can be that they can be more effective students overall. I think there's also this issue as students go from the gateway courses, which tend to have a certain kind of grading structure, to the more advanced courses. Some students don't know how to transition from those kind of multiple choice to written assignment, group project kinds of things. And so maybe we need to make sure that they, as they make that transition, that they're understanding how their skills need, maybe new skills, or they need to get better at certain things. It's not just about passing the exam anymore. And also, I think what we're showing at Michigan is that we can create an organizational capacity to do these kinds of projects. I know that there are much bigger projects going on other campuses like Arizona State and smaller schools like Austin Peay, but it's been a real challenge at a place like Michigan to figure out how to get this to happen institutionally, despite the fact that our learning management system, we're early partners in Sakai, that happened very organically, almost seamlessly on our campus. But to transition between running an LMS to using the data available in that LMS and the other data sources on campus and make use of them in really valuable ways, that has been a much harder process, but we're making headway there. And the important thing that I would like to take away from this when you're thinking about using any kind of analytics is that these numbers are subject to interpretation. And so we need to be careful about who we're giving them to, that they understand what underlies those numbers, and that they can put them in the context for which they were generated, and then how we can use that information to really help students going back to that initial sequence of help-seeking behaviors that I showed you earlier figure out where the information plugs into each of those stages and how the students then can use their own resources to identify their problems and figure out where to go to get help for them. I want to close by thanking our collaborators in the MSTEM Academy, as well as the ITS team at the University of Michigan. So now we have time, plenty of time for questions. Yes, sir.
I have a question.
Yes.
Maybe it's two questions, maybe they're related. What's the role of faculty?
Oh, I'm sorry. Two questions maybe related. What would be the role of the instructors in this data flow? Because I know you said you're thinking about an instructor faculty view, but there wasn't really much discussion about how information would flow from advisors back to faculty. And maybe related to that question, do you think there would be a big difference at campuses where the faculty is largely adjunct professors without the same, well, let's say, if you don't have in the system a kind of institutional memory or culture that would facilitate the kind of interventions and knowledge that you described here?
Yeah. So those are two very different questions, and I want to take the first one first. In terms of giving the information to instructors, is that, like, what if we deliver the system directly to instructors? We've talked about doing that with our faculty, and some of them look at us with a blank face and say, I already know what grade the student's getting in the class. I already know how they're doing. That's certainly not representative of all of our faculty, because there are instructors who would be happy to help unpack why that is. So we're proceeding with that cautiously. The mentors have established, the advisors in this particular program do have established relationships with many of these faculty members who have been teaching these gateway courses for a long time. And And they, these faculty members know these students, they know about this academy. So there is pretty good communication back and forth. And the engineering college also has their own set of academic support resources that tracks which students use those resources. And so one of the things that we've been talking about is can we put those data together to sort of follow up. So if an advisor says, go talk to the faculty member, can we find out whether they did? Or the advisor says, go to the academic support center and get some tutoring in this. Does the records at the academic support session indicate that it happened or not? So the advisor can later follow up with students saying, hey, you know, I told you to go talk to the faculty member. It hasn't happened yet. You know, why can't you go to that faculty member? What's at issue there? So it's a very complicated system. And so part of the reason I'm happy to still leave it at the level of the advisors is we're still coming to understand the nature of those complications. The second question that you have, because I have a cold, my brain is a little fuzzy, and I'm not quite sure I remember exactly what it was.
Well, the second question just related to the point you just made, that these teachers have been teaching these courses and have been at the institution for a while. But thinking more broadly about other colleges, other universities, other campuses, where that might not be the case, where faculty may be adjunct, they may be, without that kind of institutional culture that and memory.
Well, what's curious about this for me is, and I will admit right up front to being not very well versed in the academic literature on sheer online education, because we don't do very much of that at Michigan. And most of my research in my academic career has been on collaboration, maybe mediated collaboration, but definitely this kind of what do you get out of working directly with students. And so I haven't really had a lot of contact with online education, sheerly online. But I know that a lot of those systems that people are using for straight online education have very nice dashboards for instructors and give online instructors a lot of information. So I think that in terms of, as an instructor, whether I have a commitment to the institution or not, I think online instructors do have a certain amount of commitment to their students and may use those dashboards to help improve their own teaching. I'm sure there are good and bad online instructors, just as I have colleagues that teach on my campus who are better or worse at teaching. So, but it is an advantage, I think, of us in some ways as being a best-case scenario that we're a large, well-sourced institution with an engineering college is very interested in undergraduate education, that we have a provost who's supportive of these analytic efforts. So, I feel lucky to be where I am, and I learn what I can from the kind of data and access that we have and hope that we can see where it pushes out and whom it continues to work for, what conditions it works better or not. So I think it's a good question. Yes, Barbara.
Have you done any exploration of doing analytics across courses or, even looking longitudinally for students who've been in the program for a while?
Yes. We have a new project that we're just starting. As I said, our provost has been supportive of analytics efforts on campus, and we just had two new projects funded in the lab, and one of them will look at sequence of courses and whether certain sequences are more productive for students than others, as well as the thing I mentioned earlier that we're looking at whether students who take courses off campus that are supposed to prepare them for the online, the on-campus version, whether those are successful. So we have a lot of things going forward, and what's nice is now that we have our institutional technology service on board, we can get at and automate more and more of the data that's available in the U of M warehouse, and we can start to ask more questions like that.
I was thinking also in terms of the student profiling. There may be students who, carry certain patterns of behavior across courses,
yep.
And then there may be others where it's more, course specific,
yeah.
Or a certain
mm-hmm.
kind of course.
Right, they just weren't prepared for
I
that
just
particular
wonder if you
domain.
Had, yeah, any data on that?
I don't currently have data on it, but I would love to have data on it and hope to generate some.
So yes. I want to ask another question about
sure.
faculty. Do you just take the data from the courses? Do you have to get faculty permission? So there's no sort of pushback. I say this as a faculty member, and I know other faculty members on our campus would be potentially uncomfortable about opening up their LMS sites, particularly
right.
tying into the question about, you know, adjuncts and potentially untenured faculty, that the administration is poking in the data in their course.
Right. So let me answer this question this way, and it doesn't really acknowledge your discomfort as a faculty member. Or a faculty member's discomfort. Okay. Well, first of all, let me assure you we have IRB approval to do this. Right. So we did submit application and make sure that everything that we're doing with the data passes those standards. But I have been part of the university's privacy committee bringing exactly this question to the privacy committee to say this is okay, right? And it is a common misperception that we are invading students' privacy by doing this. Now, instructors' privacy, I still think our privacy committee would say it's not an invasion because the university has what's in our SPG, a business right to know, or business reason to know. And just as, it's not considered legally out of bounds for us to have this. One of our colleagues, not at Michigan, remember who's?
John Fritz,
yeah. And even there was a recent, I think it was even a Gates conference, and they brought some lawyers there to address this question. And FERPA, it's not a violation of FERPA policy to use this data with respect to the students. Now, faculty members, it's not that they don't know we're doing this. Lots of them know we're doing this, but we don't, currently we don't do anything with this data that would give information, specific kinds of information to anybody's dean or department chair. We've never been asked to do that. Teachers in K-12 are looking at sort of threats about being assessed for their capability, I suppose that could happen, but right now it's just not an issue that's at play for us. Yes.
Do you have already some reaction from students? And what about your ideas for the view for the students?
Right. So it isn't a secret to these students. A lot of times the advisors will even open this view with the student there. And so the students know the advisors are getting this specific information from somewhere. But again, they're in this STEM academy. They actually get a fellowship or a stipend for being a member of that academy. And in doing so, they agree to work with all the resources available to them in that academy. So it hasn't been an issue that we're aware of. None of the advisors have come to us and said, I have to look at this on the sly or anything like that. So I think by and large, the students are happy to have somebody specifically saying, this is what I think your problem is. Here's where I think you should go to get help, and come back and tell me how that went, and let's look and see how your grades are going based on you having done those things. I'm getting the signal that we're almost out of time, so is there any last question? I'm happy, and my colleague Steve is here. We're happy to follow up with you. Our lab has a number of projects, and that's the URL for our lab at Michigan, and thank you for your attention and your great questions. Bye-bye.